It has. How are you guys? Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, doing great. Doing great. All right. There's going to be a battle that you wrote about in the Supreme Court, and amateurism is at stake. So, you know, the NCAA has staked out its part in this, in NCAA versus Alston. When they got into the O'Bannon case, which was different than this, the NCAA, I kind of felt like Mark Emmert handed it to them on a silver platter on the witness stand. So in this, it's different. It's the Supreme Court. How do you view this, and what avenue could this take?
Well, first you have to start with the assumption that, well, the certainty that there's going to be some kind of NIL rights, and probably pretty big NIL rights for the players. Name, image, and likeness.
Yep.
They're going to be able to profit, do commercials, gain endorsements, be paid for social media, apparel, everything. Okay. That's going to happen and be in place by the next academic year, 21-22. What Alston case in the Supreme Court does is says that it has been ruled in a lower court in the Ninth Circuit in Northern California. Players have uncapped educational benefits while they're in school, among other things. Now, what that means, to simplify it, you could take, if Sean Clifford lived off campus 10 miles and, you know, need to get to class, a school could buy him a new car.
Right.
Hey, it's tethered to education. It's
right.
An educational benefit.
Right.
So the NCAA and the conferences have filed separate briefs, separate petitions. They were accepted. The Supreme Court case, you know, seeking those caps that are in place. If the Supreme Court rules for the lower court, that is the end of amateurism, guys.
Exactly.
You got the NIL.
Yep.
You got the NIL, unlimited educational benefits. They'd be pros.
Okay. It's interesting because, you know, as you mentioned, the Ninth Circuit Court in Northern California open the door on this. Now, that's not surprising, you know, and not to get political here, but everyone knows that the Ninth Circuit Court is a more wide-open liberal court. I think that's fair.
Yep.
That's fair.
Yep.
Because of the balance of the Supreme Court right now, does that now make this unpredictable because nobody really knows how these nine people feel about this?
Well, just talking to legal experts and assembling that story, I think the NCAA and the conferences have a heck of a shot at prevailing.
Right.
Because it is a conservative court. I don't want to call it a Trump court because a lot of those justices were there before he appointed his. But it is a conservative court. A conservative court would be more pro-business than pro-labor. So you would the assumption is that they would side with the NCAA and the conferences and overturn the decision by Claudia Wilkin in the Ninth District. The problem there is they have to go before her in another case that's now being heard called House versus NCAA, which deals with name, image, and likeness. It's another challenge to that. I mean,
right.
I don't know the details in it.
Right.
So are you just creating the same problem in that? And here's another option. The Supreme Court may say, well, we don't really have an opinion on this. We're going to remand it back to the Ninth Circuit. And so her decision stays in place. So it's interesting and complicated.
Is there a fine line the NCAA has to walk in its Supreme Court brief, because they do eventually have to go back to her about the Grant House case?
Yeah, I made that point in the piece that a big part of their presentation, and they only get 20 minutes, each side gets 20 minutes in front of the Supreme Court, is that Claudia Wilkin misapplied the law. Forget about right or wrong. She shouldn't have made the decision in the first place because she misapplied the law. And it gets into horizontal structure and joint ventures and everything else. It's really complicated, but that's the best way to sum it up. And so how does that sit with her? Oh, I misapplied the law, huh? How do you like this in house? You know, to narrow it down, she's just for background, she's a 71-year-old Stanford educated, very decorated judge who's been in the on the Ninth Circuit since 1993, appointed by the Clinton administration. And you're right, there's a reason all these lawsuits filed against the NCAA are in the Ninth Circuit, because it's perceived to be more liberal. And that's, look, that's not, that's the way you play ball. This isn't an NCAA thing necessarily. In any case, they try to go look for the friendliest court they can get a decision from.
Exactly. We've talked a couple of times. Once was during the summertime, a couple times during the season. In your opinion, how remarkable was it that somehow this season did get in?
Pretty remarkable in that I was being asked before the season how, you know, if will it get played? And all I would say is, I think there will be some games played. Don't tell me how it ends.
Right.
Because, you know, the same thing is happening in basketball. There's doubt whether they'll be able to get that whole thing in. And I think football, in essence, drove through the car wash without getting very wet. I don't think anybody should be taking a lap because there weren't any right answers.
Right.
You know, it was, you know, the players were asked to do something that was never in their letters of intent. Yeah, I know about the opt-outs, but look, if you're the number one player in the draft or even just want to play football, you know what you have to do. You know what you want to do.
Right.
And so, but they didn't tell you. You'd be getting up at 6 a.m. every day to test. You'd practice for 35 days without playing. You might catch a dread disease. And in fact, you did catch a dread disease and you know, and how that worked out. So I think the real heroes here, if we're going to sign letter grades, the heroes here are the players. I think that's
no
what
doubt. Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, I mean, I know here, Northwestern, to their credit, now they ended up missing a game, but not because of them. Northwestern, I think, had no positives.
They had one. I did a piece on
okay.
it. Yeah.
Yeah, they had one. Penn State had 58 false positives. I think Penn State only had one positive total. I mean, that takes remarkable discipline within a bubble and a campus environment where students were here, Dennis. They were here.
Yeah.
Up until Thanksgiving. And these guys had to sacrifice holidays and things like that to make this happen, too.
Yeah, I was alert. I was tipped to a situation at Northwestern. Again, just using it as an example of the sacrifices the players went through, there was a tight end at Northwestern who, like his other teammates, you know, went through these restrictions, but spent Christmas in his off-campus apartment with his two roommates eating burritos and watching Austin Powers movies. And that, with that, you know, not with their family.
Right.
So that's the kind of things they went through, and somehow they got through it. I do give Pat Fitzgerald and the administration credit on that one.
Nothing screams Merry Christmas like three Austin Powers movies.
And 1 billion burritos.
One million burritos.
That's right.
No, that'd be a billion, sir. All right. Hey, Larry Scott, look, the way the Pac-12 network went, other things have gone. What are the stakes now for the Pac-12 moving on from Larry Scott and the decision they have to make there?
I think it's relevant to the Power Five conference. When that day, that night, that Tuesday night it broke, I wrote the story. I said essentially the Pac-12, it's become a Power Four.
Yeah.
Yes, they the only thing that makes them a Power Five right now is they get Power Five money for those West Coast markets. And that, they're always going to get paid for those as long as there's a conference there. So that's what makes them a Power Five. They make Power Five money. Number five Power Five money, but still.
Right.
Everything else, competitively, recruiting, perception, marketing, everything, they're not with it. I mean, this, you know, here's a guy who played more basketball games in China than won national championships in the two major sports in the 11 years he was there.
Right.
So something was misapplied. So, it was bad. They need a total redo there. It has to start with the TV negotiations for the next contract, which isn't going to come up until 2025. but you start negotiating about 18 months from now.
Right, exactly. And see, what I, if I recall correctly, Dennis, it was like a dozen years he signed for. I mean,
that was part of the problem. He signed a 12-year deal in 2010, I think, which at the time, or 2001, at the time looked really good. He had monetized what had been left on the table all these years in the old Pac-8 and Pac-10, and then expanded, failed the Big 12 raid, but expanded, you know, got more money for Utah and Colorado. The problem was, some of the other Power Five leagues were able to renegotiate two and three times during that window, and now are way out of sight. I mean, you know, the Big Ten is, you know, average payout is $54 million.
Right.
I think the Pac-12 is $32 million per year. Yeah. So they've got to do that. And real quick, there's an issue in the ACC. The same thing.
Yes,
their contract
exactly.
goes to 2036 and is undervalued, basically because ESPN said, okay, we'll give you your network. You know, they didn't want to do it. They, in fact, had told the SEC, because of competitive reasons, we will not add another network after we do yours.
Right.
When they added the ACC, the SEC was not only pissed, but they said, okay, here's the trade-off. You get your network, ACC, but we're going to do some cost certainty out to 2036. And so the only way the ACC can open that contract up and make it worth more is to get Notre Dame as a member.
Exactly.
That's not going to happen.
No, but it's certainly for Jim Phillips, it still has to be something that's at the top of his list of something to attempt to do.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Going in, absolutely. And I don't know how that looks. I thought it was a success for the ACC and the Notre Dame. That was great.
Oh, I thought it gave pause.
I thought it should have given pause to everybody at Notre Dame. Let's just think about this now, you know?
Yeah.
But they want to go back to how they started in their independent status. They were a barnstorming team in the early 1900s playing across the country because the Big Ten wouldn't play them.
Right.
And that's how all this started.
So you talked about the Big Ten money. We know what the SEC money is. So the neighborhoods are right there. Are they creating financially such a separation between now it goes two, then ACC, Big 12, then Pac-12? Is that kind of separation potentially developing because of the money?
You're seeing that microclimate, micro separation within. It used to be the Group of Five and the Power Five. Now it's the top of the Power Five, whatever it is, SEC, Big Ten.
Yeah,
and even smaller than that, if you want to go to football, Clemson, Ohio State, and Alabama are so far ahead of everybody else right now. It's amazing. It's those three and everybody else, to the point that Notre Dame, that's played football for 115 years, was the upset number four team this year.
Right.
And it may be the same this coming season. You know, it may be those three again, although I think Ohio State's has too much to replace to be in the top four, but we'll see.
Right. Which then brings up, there's still 5 years to go on the contract. Everyone talks about expansion all the time. So, look, obviously money is going to play a role. I got it. So I'm gonna do the stupid thing. Let's, for the moment, take money out of it. Okay. So now that I've done the stupid thing, all right, does college football need an expanded playoff just to get the nation involved in the college playoff?
No, and I'll tell you why. If you go, and we're talking with the knowledge that, you know, these ratings were the worst ever. I think for the champ game, they have been the worst ever this year. So we know that. That's what we're talking about.
Sure.
Repetition of the same teams.
Right.
Tell me with eight teams if it would have been any different in the champ game.
No.
Probably not.
No.
Probably not. If you go to eight, three of those spots are going to go to the usual suspects. This year it would have been, I don't know, Florida, Georgia, and who would the third team have been? And then Cincinnati.
Right.
Does that blow the ratings out of the water?
No.
Not, you know, in that example, the answer is no. So if you're going to do it for that, then you got to start thinking long and hard. Yeah, will it be some diversity and variety? Yeah, absolutely. But at the end of the day, you're still going to see, you know, teams. Think about this: in the 7-year history of this thing, there have been 28 slots.
Right.
Four teams times seven. Only 12 teams have played for it.
Right.
You know, it's kind of going to be the same with an extra layer.
Right.
So you got to think about that.
Does it potentially change the thought process? I mean, obviously, you know, everybody's going to sign with their teams. I got that. But does it change the thought process in recruiting? Because in the NFL, if you are the Jacksonville Jaguars, you get Trevor Lawrence. If you're Alabama, you win the national championship, you get the number one recruiting class. So it's 180. So could it change the spreading of players across the country because more teams are perceived as having a shot of being in it?
It could. You know, as long as Nick Saban, Dabo Sweeney, and Ryan Day are in place, I don't know if it does in any meaningful way.
Right.
Because, as I said, I think it's not only talent, it's the marketing, they're getting out front on NIL and telling prospects this is what you can earn.
Right.
In terms of just something as small as analysts. Stuff like that, nutrition, that type of thing. So yeah, it does. You know, it happened this year. The number one player in the country went to USC. USC hasn't been relevant for a while, and they had the number eight team in the country, or number eight recruiting class.
Right.
So it's happening, but the problem with it's a multi-layered argument. And I did this story years ago. You know, what is the worth of ranking recruiting classes? And I just started writing them down from year to year. It only matters in the top 10 because the top 10 are the ones that usually win. So it becomes a circular argument. You get below that, top 10, 15, it's a crapshoot on who's going to win. Big, I'm talking about. But the same 10 teams are in there every year, give or take.
Right. Always a pleasure. You know that, Dennis. Thanks so much. Had a lot of fun.
All right. Enjoy. Thanks, guys.